What do you go about that? What have you got there now?
Well, these are pictures. We went over this before.
And Jacob.
Sir, we went over these before, and I don't want to, and I thought I'd put them away so they wouldn't show.
What are you talking about now? What's the event?
I'm trying to describe what happened back in 1968 with the burnings. Bill Moorhead was a congressman, and I was the president of Hill City, and my business was
president
in the
Hill. President of Hill City, yes.
And I said to Bill Moorhead, I helped them get the $89,000 for the United Black Front. Clyde Jackson was one of seven kids, and Jackson took the $89,000, and he bought the Poole Funeral Home on Wiley and Trent for his office. He bought two Cadillacs, and it got himself a new girlfriend, although I had met his wife and his three kids. And then, of course, I said to Bill Moorhead, now, that's enough. Well, by God, the next year the government did it again, and, of course, the money was wasted. Then along came United Jewish Federation, and Alvin Rogel wanted to give the Crusaders $16,000 to buy a building on Center Avenue, and I said, no, there's no reason to believe that Clyde Jackson and the Crusaders have thought through what their purposes are or whether they can get money to fill that building with program once you've made it available to them. And needless to say, that's what developed. And I wrote a rather difficult letter to Alvin telling him this was not the thing to do and this was not the way to spend public funds. Now, I was wiped out, and they got the money, and needless to say, they disappeared before they even got
started. Who were they? Who
the Crusaders were a bunch of kids that up on the hill that had Whitey scared, and the Jews just ran in to try to calm them down by buying them a building. Well, they didn't have any resources, and they didn't have any program, and they had no way of sustaining it. There was no reason to.
But isn't that the truth for so many of the things?
Well,
not only the Jewish community.
No, but I'm saying this is
the national.
I understand.
The $68,000 came from the national.
The point was that I can't get through to these people that you don't buckle under just because they're black and because they threaten you. You've got to realize they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like other human beings, and they have to be subject to reason. And the fact that we destroyed them for 400 years doesn't mean that we now have to buy back our right to coexist with them.
Well, wait a minute. Jews didn't destroy them.
Well, that isn't the point. White people destroyed black people for so many centuries, and they think they're now going to be able to throw money at black problems, and they're going to disappear, and that's not the answer. The answer is to give blacks the opportunity of an education, of decent housing, and a job, and treat them like even, Stephen, level-field human beings given every opportunity to fulfill their potential. There's no reason to talk about quotas and talk about reverse discrimination. Go ahead and create a job setting. For instance, we have jobs out in the North Hills and no way for the blacks to get there to even compete for the jobs. We built a shopping center we built RIDC Park. And no bus service to get them from East Liberty to the job site. So you immediately exclude all blacks from having participation. So the first thing you have to do is improve the transportation system to get blacks out of the ghettos in which they live, to get them to job sites where they can perform. The second thing is, now that you've provided a job, is to give them the opportunity with a decent living wage, to give them the health care that the job entails, give them a chance at advanced education so they can better themselves, and give them a chance to earn enough money to own their own housing. I mean, you're going to go through the same problems with the Russians and with the other undeveloped countries of the world. You don't throw money at it. You don't buy them a fish. You buy them a fishing rod.
Yes.
You've got to give them a chance to do things for themselves on the basis of having a decent opportunity to fulfill themselves at their level, not your level, or the level of some social worker sitting in an ivory tower.
You were in the diamond business? How'd you get into that?
At the age of 60, I had forgotten that there was a need to keep up with inflation, and someone asked me to dispose of a wholesale diamond business in the Clark Building. And so I said, well, to my wife, before I sell it, I'd better buy it and find out what I'm talking about. So we stayed in the wholesale jewelry business for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I took the gemological course and bought and sold and traded diamonds and had a wonderful time. My wife thoroughly enjoyed herself, and I made enough money to carry on my retirement and make my life pleasant and it was difficult to stay in because you had to play with a very, very, very difficult cash business. The Payas and the Yamaki guys would come in from New York to sell you diamonds, and they wanted to be paid in cash. Well, I wasn't about to play a cash game. I did that when I was 12 years old. And so if they wanted cash for some diamonds I was buying, I'd write a check and run across the street to the bank and cash it and bring it back and keep my records straight. But I had to get out of that business. It was far too...
too risky for you?
It was too marginal in terms of risk. You had to be dirtier than I was.
Capable of sustaining,
intended to be or wanted to be in order to make a buck. But it was fun, and I enjoyed it, and I was successful at it. In fact, it was the disappointment to most of the people in the business how such a dumb guy like me could have been so successful in such a short period of time in mastering the art of evaluating diamonds when it took them 35 years to get to the same place. Well, as I told you, the making of decisions is the best, the choice between uncertainties, and when I evaluated a diamond, it was A, 1, 2, 3, yes, 1, 2, 3, no, 1, 2, 3, and the worst it could be is 50-50 wrongs. So my success turned on being able to make a decision more than anything else and using common sense.
Yeah, but you don't think that the quality judgment was decisive?
The quality judgment was subjective.
Yes.
And in the case of being decisive, only at the highest levels of the maximum quality. And I was trading in diamonds that would have been up to $8,000 to $10,000 a carat. Mm-hmm. Over that, you get into an esoteric range that very few people in the world have a right to even make an evaluation. Mm-hmm. But when I was dealing with a half a carat stone at $1,000 or $1,500 or $2,500 or $3,000 a carat, that wasn't in the same ball game as $9,000 a carat.
No, that's right.
And so when I needed to find a special evaluation of a higher quality product, I would turn to Marty Morrow at Hardy and Hayes, who was obviously a recognized authority, or Jacob Davis, who was in the business for 50 years, and I would get their opinion.
Say your word about Jacob Davis.
Well, you asked me about that on a previous...
Well, you never talked about
it. Oh, yes, you did. I asked you and I answered your question. Jacob Davis... I was an interesting son of a very successful father and mother who attempted to carry out his family's responsibilities and operated the diamond business until a very old age, and took a significant posture in the community, was one of the original presidents of the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies before the merger. His picture hangs in the Federation offices.
He went to Harvard, didn't he?
He went to Harvard because in those days this was one of the most prestigious wealthy families in the country. But of course today that doesn't mean anything because I subsequently went to Harvard too.
Is there anybody around from his family?
Yes, there are. There is a niece, Barnetta Davis Lang, who writes the book reviews for the Chronicle. She has three sons and they're still here. He has a sister still living here on Fifth Avenue across the street from me, a beautiful woman who was married to a wonderful man. Davis was a closet Reconstructionist. He would have started out as a Reformed Jew with his parents at the turn of the century and always had an active role at B'nai Israel, where his parents may have helped found that synagogue. He might have belonged to two or three different congregations.
Probably did. But I know that he gave money to the Reconstructionist Federation because Ira Eisenstein used to come and visit him.
Right. He was a generous man. He had a tradition on his family's side of support of religion. And, of course, his mother was the founder of the Ladies' Hospital Aid of Montefiore.
Now, wait a minute. That's a very common thing.
It may be common.